We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I got a bad feeling about this.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Why, oh why, didn't I take the blue pill?
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Tackling life's most important questions. This is the Don Johnson Show.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the Don Johnson Show. Great to have you along today on Immaculate Heart Radio. Later in the show, we're going to be talking to Trent Horn, one of the smartest guys I know. We're going to be talking about Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons, the Latter-day Saints, all part of the 20 Answers Challenge that Catholic Answers is doing. So I look forward to talking with Trent later in the show about a couple of his booklets. Right now, though, I'm joined by Kalen Green. Kalen is the producer of The Patrick Madrid Show.
Kalen, are you a fan of late-night talk shows?
Sometimes.
I'm too old.
If I stay up late enough, but typically I'm in bed by then.
Yeah, me too. And I'm just too old to stay up. I've never really stayed up to watch late-night talk shows, especially these days when you just get up and watch the best of on your YouTube clips anyway, right? Isn't that one? In fact, I saw a joke about that. I can't remember which one. Which one of the late night hosts was saying that basically all of his shows were now just watched by people in, 2-minute segments while they're in the bathroom is how, is how it works. Nobody's catching these things live. Well, Stephen Colbert, who you may know, left Comedy Central, I don't know, maybe a year ago and took over Late Show. And so now he took over from David Letterman. He hosts The Late Show on one of those networks. I frankly don't even know which one that is. CBS, maybe? Well, Stephen Colbert, who is a pretty well-known Catholic, pretty outspoken about his faith. I'm one of those guys. I like Stephen Colbert. He seems like a guy I'd be fun to hang out with and, you know, shoot the breeze, have a beer or whatever. I always cringe a little bit when he starts trying to do apologetics on the air. I'll be honest. In fact, I remember he talked to Bill Maher one time, and it was, I'm like, no, Stephen, don't go there. Oh, no, it's too late. And it always seems like, you know, you get the atheist on there, and the atheist comes away looking smarter, and the atheist worldview comes away looking a little better than it did before they got on the Colbert Show. I don't mean that in any way derogatory of Stephen Colbert. He seems like he's on there just trying to be a nice guy, just doing his best. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like maybe he's trained in apologetics. I doubt that he's gone through my, you know, evangelization training. I suspect he hasn't done that. But I'm here to just maybe offer a small critique today, because this week he had, just a couple of nights ago, he had atheist Ricky Gervais on the show. And Ricky's a pretty outspoken atheist. He made one of the most preachy atheist movies I've ever seen. You know, they always decry the whole notion of Christians making movies because they're always so preachy. And I can't think of the name of it now. We'll get to it. But this is a really preachy atheist movie. We'll get our crack researchers on it. And so he's just this very outspoken atheist. Well, he's on the other night, and Stephen starts talking about God. Max, let's go with a clip one, please.
Is there a prime mover? Is there a demiurge that started everything?
Well, outside science and nature, I don't believe so. Because the interesting thing is, this is the thing, right? So I'm an agnostic atheist, technically. Agnostics mean it means no one knows whether there's a God. So everyone's technically agnostic. We don't know.
That's true.
So
that's true.
An agnostic atheist is someone who doesn't know there's a God or not, as no one does.
So you're not convicted of your atheism?
Well, I am.
Sure.
No, I am, because atheism is only rejecting the claim that there is a God. Atheism isn't a belief system. Mm-hmm. So this is atheism in a nutshell. You say there's a God. I say, can you prove that? You say no. I say, I don't believe you then.
Okay, so a couple of, I think, just minor errors that Mr. Colbert made there. Because this is pretty common atheist tactics from Ricky Gervais. So he starts out by saying something like, hey, I'm an agnostic, I don't know, and you don't know either. When it comes to God, you don't know. And Colbert's like, yeah, Okay. Whoa. No, we're not agnostics. We do know. This whole notion of religious faith as something where, well, you got to put your brain in your back pocket. There's no evidence for this. This is something where we just have to take it on blind, irrational faith. That's what religion is. According to skeptics, that's what religion is. It does no service to them to agree with that presupposition, all right? So for Colbert to just, I think he's just trying to be nice, like, okay, yeah, I'm trying to find common ground. No, you can't find common ground with the notion that you don't know whether God exists. that's what Gervais said to him. Well, you don't know. Yeah, all right, I guess I'd, whoa. No, we do know, at least with as much certainty as we know anything else about the world. Okay, this is an important concept. The other one is when Gervais says, hey, atheism is not a belief system. Atheism is not a, what I would say, he didn't use these terms, but he's saying atheism is not a worldview. No. This is, you gotta stop right there. You gotta stop the conversation and say, whoa, Ricky, Mr. Gervais. In fact, what we want to talk about here is competing worldviews. This is just what we were talking about with our skeptical caller before the break there.
Les.
Yeah, Les. Thank you. So, Les, we're trying to say, listen, Les, you have a worldview, right? Well, Ricky Gervais has a worldview. He believes certain things to be true about reality. How we got here, why we're here, what happens when we die. He has beliefs about all those things. He thinks they are true. The alternative view, and there's many alternative views, but one alternative view is the Christian worldview, right? We have beliefs about those questions too. Why are we here? How should we then live? What happens when we die? The discussion you want to have with Mr. Gervais is not whether, it's not an irrational one where you just have to believe. It's which worldview has the evidence to support it? First of all, what's your worldview? That there is no God. The matter is all there is. We live in a closed system of cause and effect. All of these things. I suspect that's what he would say. He's a pretty hardcore materialist. Because of that, we have things like free will is an illusion. Love is an illusion. Morality is an illusion. All of these things you want to bring out. That's your worldview, Mr. Gervais. Does the evidence support that worldview?
Mm-hmm.
Or does the evidence support a different worldview? The Christian worldview is the one with the evidence. It's the one that actually has the reason, and we'll get to this more in a minute, but the science behind it. And this is the conversation you want to have with people. You don't want to agree with their premise that, listen, we're all skeptics. We're all agnostics. We all just believe stuff, and we don't really have evidence for it. I just don't believe you're God. Well, you can't accept that as a premise. Kaylin, am I
right? Yeah, you can't prove that God doesn't exist.
Well, no, you can't. But again, I don't think you don't want to bring in things like he says, well, you can't prove God exists. And Colbert says, okay, yeah. Whoa.
I mean, you're the expert on this, Don. You did a whole movie on this.
So. Well, I did it. And you're right. This is one of my things. Like, so I did write the book, How to Talk to a Skeptic. So this is one of my things where I'm like,
yeah.
I've talked to so many atheists. They call up.
Well, you were an atheist.
No, right? I was never an atheist. No.
Oh.
No. But I interacted with a lot of atheists.
Okay.
Yeah. This is how I got in. That's what ended up making me Catholic, ultimately, is that I talked to people like Ricky Gervais and realized that the answers to their questions ultimately were Catholic. As you explore the evidence for Christianity, you end up realizing, oh, the Catholic faith is the one that actually has the evidence for it. But that's it's a bit down the road. Like right now, you just want to establish if you get this notion that I'm an atheist and I just have a negative belief. I don't believe anything positive. You say, no. We all believe something positive. And what we want to do in this conversation is compare our positive beliefs. I want to compare your worldview versus my worldview. That's your starting point. Don't get into a discussion about, particular Christian beliefs or any of that. Like, no, Ricky, you've got a worldview. You've got a positive belief. I get that you don't believe Christianity. I get it. Fine. That's all good. But just tell me what you do believe so that we can compare worldviews. That's a key starting point. All right, let's move on. He continues. Let's go to the next clip, Max.
So you believe in one God, I assume?
In three persons, but go ahead.
Okay, so you believe... Okay. So, but there are about 3,000 to choose from that have been, people who believe in...
I've done some reading, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So basically, you believe in... You deny... one less God than I do. You don't believe in 2,999 gods, and I don't believe in just one more.
Right.
Okay. Again, don't say right there at the end.
Yeah.
Don't agree at that. This is a very, and again, this is very common. It's like they have a book or something, like the Atheist Handbook for throwing objections at Christians. This is one of the major ones. I just believe in one less God than you do. You're an atheist the same as I am, except for this one God that you believe in. And the idea there is that, well, in the same way that you reject Zeus or Poseidon or all of these other mythical things, right? You reject those, Kalen. Well, in the same way, I reject your God. That's all. We're just, you know, you're rational 299 out of 300, or, you know, 299,000. I'm just rational in all of them. All right, I hear the music, so we'll come back to this. But how would you respond to Ricky Gervais when he says, oh, I just believe in one less God than you do? Well, what's your comeback to this? We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back.
You're listening to The Don Johnson Show. During this break, don't forget to check out DonJohnsonMinistries.org for more information about me and what we do, as well as all the archives. That's DonJohnsonMinistries.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Stick around.
Now on DVD and digital download, a story about finding truth, meaning, and beauty in the last place they expected.
I can't become Catholic. What, am I insane? There's no way.
A film to encourage your faith and help you reach out to others.
I thought, this is just nonsense. These people are crazy. Atheism is much more rational.
Convinced, featuring over 20 of today's most interesting and articulate Catholic voices, including Jennifer Fulweiler, Scott Hahn, Abby Johnson, and Patrick Madrid. Get convinced now at convincedmovie.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Don Johnson Show. I'm here with Kalen Green. Great to have you along today on Immaculate Heart Radio.
We have been talking about the Stephen Colbert discussion that he had on The Late Show this week with atheist Ricky Gervais. Now,
and we found out what the movie was called, didn't we?
We did. What was the movie called?
The Invention of Lying.
That's right. The Invention of Lying. One of the most preachy, worst movies I've ever seen. I mean, it's so blatantly condescending, I think, to religious belief. Basically, the idea is, if I remember correctly, and it's been a while since I saw it, but there's this alternate reality where everybody tells the truth all the time. There's no dishonesty in the culture. And I believe it's the Ricky Gervais character who comes in and talks about life after death as if it's some, I can't remember how, but he becomes like this God character, and he just lies to them about all these things that are going to happen, life after death, and he gives them 10 rules, and, you know, he's just like this imaginary, he knows he's lying, but he's the God character, right? And he destroys the society because that's what God does. That's what religion does. It's ridiculous. Anyway, he was on, and as much as I like Stephen Colbert and I appreciate his heart, you know, that he's trying to be out there talking about God and religion, and I don't mean to be, you know, too hard on him, but I watched this discussion he had with Ricky Gervais, and I left thinking, man, if I wasn't a believer, or if I was like questioning my faith, I'd walk away from this discussion thinking that, huh, Ricky Gervais comes across as the rational, like smart thinking guy here, and religion seems to be something where you have to be a bit of a mindless, you know, boob. Like, you have to put your brain in your back pocket and just believe on blind faith. And if we really wanted to follow the evidence and where it leads, we would become atheists. And I didn't think, and what do you, he's got maybe 3 minutes or 4 minutes. I mean, he doesn't have long with him. I get that. But to go through the interview like he did and agree with things like, well, you know, we don't have proof for God, or we don't have reasons to believe. Yeah, all right, you know, this sort of thing. It's problematic, right? You want to discuss worldviews. And in this last clip, in fact, Max, if you play clip number two for us again, please, just to remind us where we're at and for people who just joined us.
So you believe in one God, I assume?
In three persons, but go ahead.
Okay, so you believe... Okay, so... But there are about 3,000 to choose from that have been, you know, people who believe in
Islam. I've done some reading, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So basically, you believe in You deny one less God than I do. You don't believe in 2,999 gods, uh-huh. and I don't believe in just one more.
Right.
Okay, so it is a bit of a cheap debating trick from skeptics at this point. Well, basically, we're all atheists to some degree. You're an atheist when it comes to the 3,000 other gods that are out there, the 2,999. You're just not an atheist with this one. And I'm just an atheist with all of them. And you got to understand, the presupposition there is that there's all these equal claims, that there's all these imaginary gods that people made up. They don't have evidence for them. They don't have reasons to believe them. They just believe them. Some people believe in Zeus. Some people believe in other things. It's all just nonsense. It's all just fiction. It's all just myth. And you happen to choose one. But think about, I mean, do you believe... Well, if he wanted to really press this and play the hard atheist card, he could have, you know, went through like, all right, Stephen, you know, do you believe in Poseidon? You know, do you believe in the God of the Muslims? Do you believe in this God? Well, no, no, no. Why not? Hopefully what Colbert would say then is, well, because there's no reason to believe in those. Like, I don't believe in Zeus. You're right. I'm a skeptic when it comes to Zeus. But you know why? There's absolutely zero evidence that Zeus exists. Zero. None. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Nada. The presupposition when you go into this is that there's no evidence for any of those claims, right? But Christianity, the Christian claim is not that. We are not a blind faith. We are not a religion that is, well, just believe. You know, that's what faith is. There are religions out there like that, that you just have to accept what somebody tells you. And if you question it, that's a lack of faith. Or if you want evidence for it, well, that's a lack of faith. But Christianity is not one of those, okay? Christianity is a very evidence-based religion. If Jesus did not come to earth, do all those miracles, die and actually rise again, this whole thing can be thrown out the window. And that's the premise of Christianity, right? Like, that's what Paul says. Like, if he didn't rise, I believe in vain, and you shouldn't believe either. Thankfully, we have a ton of evidence that he did actually rise from the dead, right? And so Christianity is like that. It's an evidence-based religion. It's not something where you have to put your brain in your back pocket. And so when a skeptic like Ricky Gervais comes and says, well, you're a skeptic when it comes to all these others. I'm just a skeptic when it comes to, and you agree with him. No, 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 no. It's a completely different ballgame. Okay. Completely different. Let's go to clip three, Max. Let's just keep this thing going.
I have a strong desire to direct that gratitude toward something or someone.
Of course, no, of course.
And that thing is God.
We're mortal. We want to make sense of nature and science. And it's too unfathomable that everything in the universe was once crunched into something smaller than an atom.
But you don't know that.
Well,
you're just believing Stephen Hawking, and that's a matter of faith in his abilities.
Yes.
You don't know it yourself. You're accepting that because someone told you.
Yeah, well... But science is constantly proved all the time. You see, if we take something like any fiction, in any holy book, in any other fiction, and destroyed it, okay, in 1,000 years' time, that wouldn't come back just as it was. Yes. Whereas if we took every science book, right, and every fact, and destroyed them all, in 1,000 years, they'd all be back, because all the same tests would be the same result.
That's good. That's really good.
Okay, if I was one of those one of the youngsters who put stuff on YouTube when people debate, here's what I would say about this: Ricky Gervais annihilated Stephen Colbert. Like, this is one of those. Remember when Cy and you and I were talking about annihilating and destroying?
Yeah.
This was bad. This is bad, ladies and gentlemen. For Stephen Colbert to go on and agree to this statement. That, well, actually, he said, in response to science, like, Gervais is trying to present an argument. Like, well, we believe things, like, scientifically, we believe things. And for Colbert to say, yeah, but you only believe those things based on blind faith, like, on the authority of somebody. You don't actually know those things. What he's doing is not only in the rest of the conversation, he sort of accepted, yeah, you know what, yeah. We kind of have to put our brain in your back pocket. And that's what you have to do with science, too, Colbert says. Whoa. No, that's not what we have to do, okay? Science is good. Science, we accept science. We accept scientific discoveries. Those are facts for the most part, unless they are actually theories. There's a difference in science between facts and theories. Okay, we get that. But you know what? We have evidence for those. That's a solid way of learning things. That's good epistemology. And guess what? It's based on Christianity. Christianity has the same, a lot of times, the same epistemology. Like, our response to somebody saying, I believe in science, should not be, yeah, but that's on blind faith.
Right, right, like, right, right. She'd be like, me too.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. Like, of course we believe in science. And you know what? Science is Christian. And you know where science leads? To Christian beliefs, right? Like, we want truth. We want facts. We want to use our heads. We want to look at the evidence because it leads to Christianity. That's where we're going with this. It's so frustrating to hear him agree with this whole notion that, it's all up for grabs. No, it's not. And then Gervais made it. This is a relatively new one that I think is a decent one. He said all the religious documents we had, if we got rid of them, they wouldn't come back the same. But scientific things, if we got rid of them, you would still keep doing experiments. If you're in a Christian worldview, you would, but that's maybe a talk for another day. But you would get the same, the facts would come back around. Okay? But here's one response to this, and maybe not the only one, but here's one response to this. What religious texts are we talking about? Are we talking about the Bible? Okay. If we got rid of all of the Bible, I agree that we'd have a tough time getting that back. But you know what? If we got rid of every historical document in history, yeah, we'd have a tough time getting those back, too. Does that mean they're false? No, because they're historical documents. This is the thing we need to understand about the Christian claim. It's based on history. It's based on things that actually happened. It's not just a once upon a time in another galaxy. It's not like, I know I pick on Scientology a lot, but it's a good one. Made up by a science fiction writer. You know, Xenu the intergalactic warrior came here millions of years ago and deposited us in volcanoes. Any reason to believe that? No. Okay. And this is the kind of thing Gervais is attacking, and rightly so. But again, Christianity does not fall into that category. It's a historical document. So, yeah, maybe we agree that, yeah, okay, if we got rid of the Bible, that'd be tough to get back. No doubt. But that's because it's history, and we're not redoing history. But that says nothing. It says zero about whether or not Christianity is true. Okay, so you got to watch for these little debating tricks and false thinking that skeptics like Ricky Gervais throw out there.
So let me end this segment with a quick plug. I didn't really intend to set this up this way, to be honest. I was interested in the story and in the way that Colbert and Gervais interacted. That's what got me thinking about it. But one of the reasons I think about this so much is that it is a passion of mine to help train people in how to talk to a skeptic. And so I do want to throw in a quick plug here at the end of this segment. I've actually written a book called How to Talk to a Skeptic. It's available at Amazon and Christian bookstores all over the country. You can also find it in the store at donjohnsonministries.org. And I walk you through in a very practical way, yet what Peter Kreeft, if I might drop a name here real quick, what Peter Kreeft called a very profound way as well. I get into what skeptics believe, what their framework is, what our framework should be when we approach a skeptic, what our goals should be when talking to a skeptic. And so I do spend a lot of time sort of laying a philosophical groundwork, but then offering you some very practical tips about how to have some of these interactions, I would say a little bit more successfully than perhaps Stephen Colbert did. Along with that, I have a brand new personal evangelization course that is available online as well. And I'll talk a little bit more about this later in the show. You can find both of those products at donjohnsonministries.org. Check those out during the break, perhaps, which we're going to go to now. We'll be right back on the Don Johnson Show. Stick around.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Don Johnson Show. Great to have you along today on Immaculate Heart Radio. Coming up later in the show, we're going to be talking with Trent Horn about the 20 Answers Challenge, which is something that Catholic Answers has out to help us have an even better Lenten and Easter season. I'm excited about it. We're going to be talking with Trent in particular about Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses. So that should be an interesting conversation coming up in the next segment.
Hey, I wanted to share with you a new project that we just released this week. It's called Personal Evangelization, How to Be a More Effective Witness to Your Faith. And here's how it came about. Years ago, I was doing radio primarily on secular stations and talking to primarily non-believers. So we would take calls from atheists, agnostics, non-Christians of various kinds. I'm basically just doing apologetics, doing evangelization, trying to get them to be more open, at least, to the claims of Jesus and the Christian faith. And I noticed over the years a couple of things. One, the callers got much angrier. There seemed to be an animosity among the non-Christians in our culture that didn't exist before. And a lot of this had to do with the post-9/11 culture, and you had the rise of the new atheists, Christopher Hitchens, Sam Harris, Daniel Dennett, Bill Maher, these kind of guys, where skepticism took on a little harsher tone, and people became not just unbelievers, but anti-Christian. And along with that, I also started getting a lot of calls from people who had friends, family, coworkers, who were becoming this kind of skeptic, and would bring the arguments and the attitudes of the new atheists into dinner conversations and now social media posts and this sort of thing, right? So I started getting a lot of requests. Don, how can I talk with these folks? How can I have a better impact, especially with these antagonistic skeptics in my life? And so I started to do seminars on this, and they were very well received, and it ended up becoming a book called How to Talk to a Skeptic, released a couple of years ago from Baker Publishing. Well, the next step in that process has been to take a lot of that material from How to Talk to a Skeptic and add some of the new material that I have accumulated over the last couple of years, particularly in my conversion to Catholicism and in the making of the documentary Convinced. So if you're just joining us, maybe this is your first show, I became a Catholic only in 2015. And in the years leading up to that, in exploring the Catholic faith, I traveled around the country to talk to many skeptics, particularly of the hardcore skeptic variety, a lot of atheists, agnostics, hardcore Protestants who were very anti-Catholic, and talk to them about why they eventually became Catholic. What was it that caused them to move from a very harsh skepticism into the Catholic Church? Well, we've put all of that material together now. So material from How to Talk to a Skeptic and material from Convinced into an online video course. Or you can just get the audio. But may I suggest the video? There's some graphics and stuff I think that will help you in the video. It's an online video course called Personal Evangelization, How to Be a More Effective Witness to Your Faith. And it consists of 5 talks. They go anywhere from about 30 minutes to 45 minutes. 5 talks, and they cover a variety of topics related to personal evangelization. So the first one is called Why Skeptics Become Catholic. And this is a lot of material that I culled from interviewing all of those skeptics. Why do people move from an atheistic, materialistic worldview into the Catholic Church? I think this is very important to learn in doing evangelization, because if we don't understand why people actually become Catholic, if we're just operating from, well, here's why you should become Catholic, or here's why I heard people become Catholic, I think we tend to talk past the average skeptic. But if we understand why people actually do become Catholic, and frankly, it's often different than the reason we think they should become Catholic, that's a foundation, that's a starting point for doing evangelization. So that's class number one. It's called Why Skeptics Become Catholic. We walk through the journey from atheism, materialism, to finding Jesus, and then from finding Jesus, oftentimes in an evangelical setting, a Protestant setting, into the Catholic Church. We walk through the reasons people take that journey. Then, in class number two, we get into a little bit more practical material. Class two is How to Talk to a Skeptic. And this is information directly from my book, How to Talk to a Skeptic. And we talk about how to have the proper goal. We spend some time setting a framework for discussions. and then on some very practical tips that you'll want to take when interacting with skeptics. I don't know about you, but for a long time, my interactions would go like this. I'd say something, the skeptic would come back with an objection, I'd try to answer that objection. Before finishing my answer, there would be another objection. Then I'd get angry that we're not staying on topic. Then the skeptic would get angry at some other objection. It would just devolve from there. Well, I don't do that anymore. And there's a way to easily avoid those kind of emotionally draining or emotionally confrontational type of interactions. And so I walk you through some of that in class number two, How to Talk to a Skeptic. If you're just joining us, I'm talking about my new online course just released this week. It's called Personal Evangelization, How to Be a More Effective Witness to Your Faith. And it's available at donjohnsonministries.org. You go there and you click through to either the audio link, if you just want the audio only, or to video, full video and audio. Class number three is called The World Is Not Enough. And here I show you how to use the universal experience of longing that we all share in evangelization. I think this is really an underused but vitally important way to do evangelism. It's to focus on that longing, that feeling that, you know, there's got to be something more than this. I've achieved success in life, at least what the world tells me is success. I've made some money. I've got friends, all of this stuff. But yet, I'm still empty. There's still something more, and I don't know what it is. Well, using that truth as a way to evangelize, as an open door, I think is vitally important. And in class number three, called The World Is Not Enough, I show you how to use that. Class number four is called Experiences of the Divine. And here's another underused means of evangelization. I think if you're a person who has strong faith, and I ask you, why is it that you trust God? Why is it that you think things are going to work out, that you can follow Him with your whole heart and soul? I suspect that for most of you, those of you that have a strong faith, for most of you, it goes back to one, two, or maybe more miraculous type experiences with God. You look back and you say, well, God came through for me here. God did this. I was healed, or He provided me funds I needed, or some other way that God worked in my life. And because of that, I now trust Him. My walk with Jesus is based largely on those experiences. On other things too, but those are foundational. And I think that's true for most people with strong faith. Yet the interesting thing is, we don't often use those stories in evangelism. Well, why is that? I talk a little bit about that in class number four. It's called Experiences of the Divine. It's a lecture I think you're really going to enjoy. And then in class five, we talk about some of the reasons people ultimately reject Christianity. We can be really good evangelizers. We can go out and share our faith really well. Our lives can exude the presence of God. Yet some people are still not going to become Christians. They're still not going to enter the Catholic Church. Why is that? Well, in class number five, I talk about several reasons that people don't become Christian. Reasons people reject the faith. Because this is frustrating to a lot of folks. I mean, myself included. It's like you present good arguments, and maybe they even accept that those are good arguments. And you share stories of personal experiences, yet they're not open. Well, there's some reasons, and they're not always intellectual reasons. In fact, they're often not intellectual reasons that people reject Christianity. So you get over 3 hours of instruction in this course. It's something you can use on your own. Pull it up on your phone, your laptop, on your TV through Vimeo. It's very easy, but it's also something you could use in your small group. Maybe you get together with a group and you like going through various books or video courses. Something that I know a lot of people really desire is a more effective way to do evangelization, or maybe just a way. So that might be a way to go. Use it in your small group. Or maybe your parish could use a little help with evangelization. It's something that you could bring in as a 5-week study. It's called Personal Evangelization, How to Be a More Effective Witness to Your Faith. It's available at donjohnsonministries.org. And here's the thing. The sticker price on it is $29.99. And I think for it's over 3 hours of instruction. Like I said, I think that's a pretty good deal for an online course. But as an added bonus, we're actually giving you 25% off right now in conjunction with my appearance on The Journey Home, which is the show on EWTN. My appearance was just last week, and so in conjunction with that, we put everything in the Don Johnson Ministry store 25% off. You just need to use the code COMINGHOME at checkout, and you'll get 25% off your entire order. That applies to the online course as well. So the Convinced DVD, my book, How to Talk to a Skeptic, which now comes, by the way, with a free discussion guide, that's all 25% off in the Don Johnson Ministry store. Just go there and use the code COMINGHOME. All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Trent Horn about the 20 Answers Challenge. You're listening to The Don Johnson Show. We'll be right back after this short break. Stick around.
Need an idea for summer vacation? Why not join Bishop Kevin Vann and Bishop Tim Fryer for a first-of-its-kind Catholic cruise from Long Beach to Ensenada, Mexico. You'll be entertained by acclaimed musician Francis Cabildo, music ministry director at Santa Margarita High School, and director of Christ Cathedral Music Ministries, Dr. John Romeri. You'll also have the blessed opportunity to celebrate Mass at the Cathedral in Ensenada. It's all happening July 21st to the 24th. For info, call Travel of Orange, 877-538-0010. OCCatholic.com/travel.
You got me feeling so hey everybody, welcome back to the Don Johnson Show. Great to have you along today on Immaculate Heart Radio. Very good segment coming up. We have Trent Horn, who is probably very familiar to you. He's an apologist and speaker for Catholic Answers. You hear him often on Immaculate Heart Radio as a guest on Catholic Answers Live. He's the author of dozens of articles, booklets, and books about apologetics, including some that are part of a challenge that Catholic Answers is making this Lent and Easter season. Trent Horn, welcome to the Don Johnson Show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Trent, tell me about this challenge and how it works.
Well, the challenge is that we are making available our 20 Answers booklets through Catholic Answers. They're these great short little booklets on a wide variety of topics. And people who buy the entire set, a portion of their price for buying the set, will be donated to the St. Paul Street Evangelization teams to give them resources like our 20 Answers booklets to help them go out and evangelize others. So we're encouraging people to actually buy the entire set of 20 booklets. These booklets are short. You can read them in probably about an hour on a wide variety of topics. And we're challenging people to actually read them through Lent, to read the entire set. And if you do that, you'll be really equipped to answer a lot of objections to the faith and engage those who are not Catholic. And part of the proceeds from this challenge will go to support those who are out in the field evangelizing others.
Yeah, it's a fantastic deal. Not only are you going to be better equipped, you get this set. I believe it's half price. I was just looking at the website,
yeah.
Trent. I mean, they're a great deal to begin with, $30-something dollars maybe. And then 10 of those dollars goes to St. Paul Street Evangelization, an organization that's doing amazing work. So fantastic setup. Now, there are many different topics. I'm looking at the list here. We've got angels and demons, divorce and remarriage, marriage, the Eucharist, the papacy. Now, you have a couple that I'm holding in my hand that I think many people are going to be interested in because they involve people that like to come and knock on our doors. You've got a booklet here on Mormonism, yes, and one on Jehovah's Witnesses. Fantastic booklets, Trent. I know the first question people are probably going to have is, oh, awesome. Trent, tell me, what can I do when they come to my door? I suspect you answer that question in both of those books. Am I right?
Well, in the books, I talk about some questions you can ask, how to steer a conversation with either a Mormon missionary or a Jehovah's Witness. So ways you can ask, essentially, what is the source of their authority to claim that they have a revelation from God? Ultimately, the source of authority for the Mormon is going to be the Mormon Church, rooted in the revelation that was allegedly given to Joseph Smith in the 19th century. And the Jehovah's Witness, his source of authority is ultimately the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, which is the organization that claims to be God's witness and God's prophet on earth. And so I encourage people in the booklets to really show those authorities don't have any standing. There's no evidence to support their claims. But also, even if you don't do any of that, at the bare minimum, what you could do is say to the missionary at your door, oh, well, thank you so much for this literature, but I tell you what, I'm willing to take your literature if you're willing to take mine, which are these little 20 answers booklets. And then you've got at least an opportunity to plant some seeds there, and you can actually reveal how some of them, like the Jehovah's Witnesses, for example, are not allowed to take opposing literature, which is funny because they're at your door giving you opposing literature.
Right.
So it's quite ironic.
Now, Trent, you know, I didn't even know that. I so appreciate your approach to both of these groups. It's exactly the same approach I've been using for years. I remember I invited a group of Mormon elders to my youth group one time to give a presentation, and we discussed the same thing. I'm like, what is the basis of authority? I did not realize, though, that Jehovah's Witnesses could not take literature. That's some good insight. 20 questions in each of these books. We're talking to Trent Horn. We've got a booklet on Jehovah's Witnesses and one on Mormonism. I know both of these groups, it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, Trent, but they try to present themselves as Christians. Even Mormons now have really been emphasizing the Jesus aspect. Should we consider these groups Christian groups, or are they something different?
They are not Christian. And this is very controversial. Among in our ecumenical age, you can't say somebody's not a Christian. I think C.S. Lewis dealt with this problem, and he said that for many people, Christian is just synonymous with a nice chap. And so to say someone's not Christian is a way of saying they're not a nice person. And that's not the case. Many Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses are very nice people. But to be a Christian, you have to believe something very particular about God. For example, Muslims are not Christians because they deny the Trinity. They believe in one God, but Muslims deny that Jesus is God and the Holy Spirit is God. And that's the same with Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons. For example, Mormons, they are not Christians because a Christian believes there is one God who is a Trinity of three co-equal, co-eternal persons, Father, Son, Holy Spirit. But Mormons believe there are actually an infinite number of gods, and that Jesus is not as divine as the Father, and we are actually kind of gods in the making. So there's a great article by Father Luis Ladaria in the Vatican newspaper, and he says this: one cannot even consider the Mormon doctrine a heresy. The teaching of the Mormons has a completely different matrix. So they're nice people, but it is not a Christian church.
Yeah, that's very, very good insight. What about the Jehovah's Witness claim that Jesus is not God, right? He's not divine. Isn't that one of their main claims? And they'll often point, I believe, to John chapter 1 and try to give us a different interpretation. How do you respond to that claim, Trent?
Right. And what I would say is that when we look at Scripture in its entirety, it's very clear that Jesus is identified as the only begotten Son of God, and that he and the Father are equally divine. In order for the witnesses to get around this, they have to mistranslate John 1:1, the opening of John's gospel. You know, we all know it as, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Word, of course, being Jesus, because it later says the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. So John 1:1 in the Jehovah's Witness Bible says the Word was a God. But the problem here is that what they'll say is, well, it has to deal with the article in Greek. And so they'll say, oh, well, you know, they'll try to go into the Greek, but that ultimately ends up being inconsistent for them to do that. That in their own New World Translation, they translate, there came a man who was sent as a representative of God. His name was John. But it lacks the article that they're talking about in Greek. If they don't translate it, there came a man who was sent as a representative of a God. What they try to do is simply say, well, Jesus is just a God, not the mighty God. But really, Scripture doesn't know about multiple gods. There's either the true God or false gods. And I would ask the Jehovah's Witness, are you saying Jesus is a true God or a false God? And it really kind of puts them in a bind, especially when you go to all the other verses in Scripture that talk about how Jesus is as divine as the Father.
We're talking with Trent Horn. He is, of course, an apologist and speaker for Catholic Answers, one of the smartest guys I know. Trent has written at least two, maybe more, of the 20 Answers booklets that you can find in the Catholic Answers 20 Answers Challenge. It is a big challenge. When you purchase a sampler of all 20 books in the 20 Answers series this Lent and Easter, they will give $10 to St. Paul Street Evangelization after giving you half price, and we're challenging you to read all 20 of these booklets. I think it's a wonderful challenge. Trent, you mentioned something earlier that I think is quite insightful. When people think about the different, you know, so-called Christian denominations or even just different religious groups in America, they tend to say, well, you know, are they nice people? You know, are they good folks? Do I want them as my neighbors? And if so, then they must be okay. And frankly, I've known a lot of Mormons and even Jehovah's Witnesses. They are great people. What do you say to the folks who say, you know what, that's sort of what counts, right? Do we really want to get into the mud here with all of the doctrinal differences? I mean, can't we just, you know, live and let live and not worry about what people believe? I mean, how important is the truth to all of these different things?
The doctrine does make a difference, because we're trying to understand, for example, well, what happens to us after we die? How do we become right with God? That we have sinned, we have fallen short, we cannot save ourselves, and we need a Savior. Who is going to save us from sin? Who is capable of redeeming or buying back humanity? And we would say, well, the Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses say, well, Jesus is able to. I'll say, well, why? Because he died on the cross, or he led a perfect life and died on the cross for us. But you could have, for example, a child who has never sinned, never committed a personal sin, at least, have died in childhood, yet that child's not capable of atoning for anyone. The fact of the matter is, in order to have someone who can bring atonement or reconcile God and man, that person would have to be fully divine and fully human, so that their death, for example, can represent all of humanity. They must be human. But in order to atone for sins against an infinitely holy God, that person would have to be fully divine. And that's why Christianity teaches that Jesus is God incarnate, God in the flesh. And Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses who deny this ultimately undercut the atonement and the salvation that God has promised for us. And that's why it's so important to get this theology right, because it deals with matters like sin and eternal life.
Yeah, it is of ultimate significance, isn't it? We need to know the truth. The booklets are called, there's one on Jehovah's Witnesses, there's one on Mormonism. Those are two of the 20 you can get if you take the 20 Answers Challenge from Catholic Answers. I encourage you right now, go to Catholic.com and take that challenge. Pick up all 20 of those booklets at an incredible price and help out St. Paul Street Evangelization. At the same time, Trent Horn, incredible insight as always. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you as well.
All right, that's it. Another Don Johnson Show. Thanks so much for joining us this week, everyone. Don't forget to check out donjohnsonministries.org for more information about me. You can find all the archives of the shows. You can find articles, books, DVDs, digital downloads, both audio and video, all sorts of resources that I think you'll enjoy. donjohnsonministries.org. We'll see you next time.